You are listening to The Game Plan on the official Raiders podcast network. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to The Game Plan podcast on the Oakland Raiders podcast network. I'm your host, JT, as we get you set for the final regular season game of the year as the Raiders travel to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. December 30th, 2018, that's a 1:25 p.m. Pacific start at Arrowhead Stadium. Final game of the year, final regular season podcast in advance. I hope you had a very Merry Christmas. Have a great New Year. And thanks for supporting not only the Raiders, but especially the podcast. All year long, we've had a blast building the podcast every week as we game plan for the upcoming opponent. And this is a big one because it's the final game of the year. Raiders are coming off an impressive win on Monday Night Football against the Denver Broncos, which we'll get to. But an opportunity to play somewhat of a spoiler against Kansas City, who still has a lot to play for in this last game. Kansas City, the number one overall seed in the AFC. If they lose this game to the Raiders and the Chargers beat the Broncos, Kansas City can go from the one seed to the five seed. So a lot's on the line at Arrowhead for Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and the rest of the Chiefs roster. We begin, as always, taking a look back at the last game and the epic win on Monday Night Football. And we spent last week talking about it here on the podcast and all week long on the radio from the Bay Area to the entire global Raider Nation on the possibility of that game being the last game played at the famed Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. We don't know if that's the case. A lot's going to change here in the next month or so, so keep it at Raiders.com to get all the updates on the future of the Raiders, not only in Oakland, but if they don't play in Oakland, where they could be playing going into the 2019 season. But this was a game where the Raiders came out with an unbelievable game plan, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and got a huge play early on special teams.
Inside the 5 yards, picked up by Harris now. Loose football coming over to the right. Great move out to the 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50. Breaks free. He's going to go the distance. Touchdown, Raiders.
Raiders radio on the call, Brent Musburger, and for Dwayne Harris, special teams player of the week. What a sharp, smart play that was, as the ball wasn't down on close to the 1 yard line, inside the 1 yard line in the end zone, and he takes it the other way. You know, there's been a 103 yard return in the history off a punt. When you look at this one for 99 yards, it becomes one of the greatest plays on a night where it could have been the last Monday night game at the Coliseum, one of the most famous special teams plays in Raiders regular season history, and he was acknowledged after the game. That was a lot of fun. Doug Martin brought in by John Gruden to make big plays on the ground, and Doug was running hard.
Ball on the Broncos 25-yard line. Around the right side, daylight, end zone ahead, touchdown! Doug Martin dashes in.
Thought that was great because they were running the ball well. The rookie tackles had a big game. Pass protection was really good against the Denver Broncos, which should build towards the Kansas City Chiefs. And they were able to run the ball, which was really important in this game. It handled field position, clock management, all the things that we've come accustomed to with John Gruden as a head coach. And tip of the cap to Paul Gunther and his defense. The defense came to play with a couple of turnovers. I thought they played their best game of the year.
This could be the last play of the game for Denver. Fires deep right side. Intercepted. Picked off. Harris, his second in 2 weeks.
Nice play by Harris on a big play that shut the door on any type of comeback for Denver, even though the game was in hand much earlier. The Raiders played an excellent football game with raw emotion, the talent, the game plan. Everything came together for this team, and it was awesome. It happened in front of the home fans. You could sense the emotion live at the Coliseum or on television as Brett Musburger counted it down.
It's been memorable. Raiders win it 27-14.
Very impressive game. So congratulations to all the Raiders, the organization, and especially you fans, the Raider Nation, who showed up for that game. There was a huge rainstorm out in the parking lot during the tailgate and pregame. Then it didn't rain for most of the game, and I think the fans really enjoyed sticking around to the end of the game, as Derek Carr will get to making the victory lap, John Gruden running to the black hole. Here's the sound of the victory speech in the locker room.
We got an opportunity to finish, just like we talked about. We got a chance to go to Kansas City, yep. And we got our back against the wall. It's going to be a short week. You have nothing tomorrow. Tomorrow's a day off for everybody.
Appreciate it, Coach.
Merry Christmas. I want everybody in here, however. I want everybody in here Wednesday ready to go. Okay? I'm really proud of you. And I appreciate the effort. Believe me, the effort, all right, the concentration, the details were there tonight. It gives us something to really build on. We're playing good football in December. We have one opportunity left. And it's against the team that we hate the most. Right, guys?
Yep.
All right? They don't like us either, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Hey, let's go now. Merry Christmas. I love y'all. Family on three. One, two, three. Family.
Speaking of Derek Carr, you look at Derek Carr so far this year, and I've been impressed with the way he's handling the football heading into Week 17. 3,864 yards, which ranks 13th in the NFL. And Carr recording a completion percentage of 70% or better for the 10th time this season. So I like what Derek's doing, throwing 34 consecutive pass attempts without an interception to surpass Tom Brady. Tom Brady for the second longest streak in NFL history at 359. So Derek Carr's got a lot to prove in this last game, and he was excited after the game as he ran around the stadium with a victory lap.
Honestly, it was emotional because as I was doing it, I was just remembering all the memories. I mean, from breaking my ankle, from the fourth quarter comeback wins to throwing three picks in a quarter, you know, just everything, you know, and just how loyal our fans are. You know, I know it stings. I know it hurts that we might not play here because I don't know. You know, but I was going to make sure that if this was the last time, I wanted to say thank you just in whatever way I could, you know. And so anyone who sees this, Raider Nation, thank you. I love you. My family loves you. I know it hurts that we might not be the Oakland Raiders forever, but we are still Raider Nation.
Nicely said by the quarterback, Derek Carr. And for John Gruden, that's a big win for the Silver and Black. But now the focus is on Patrick Mahomes, who's putting up an MVP season.
I don't know how you can't be the MVP after you look at his body of work as a first-year starter. Not to take anything away from Breeze or anybody else that's played at a high level, but you know, this guy's making throws that people haven't seen before. Coming, closing in on 50 touchdown passes in your first year as a starter, that's quite amazing.
It is actually amazing what Patrick Mahomes is doing as we get you set for the Kansas City Chiefs coming up on Sunday. He leads an offense, currently ranked first in yards per game at over 426, first in points per game. They're averaging 35 points per game. Mahomes has thrown for over 4,800 yards, which is second in the league, 48 touchdowns with only 11 interceptions. That's a passing rating of 114. I think he's the MVP. I thought he won the MVP a month ago. Really, I thought he locked it up, and it's not supposed to be a popularity contest. Drew Brees is putting up MVP-type numbers, but we just don't see the numbers that Patrick Mahomes is putting up. So he's got a lot to play for in this last game for Kansas City, and they are going to come out ready to win this game. Kansas City needs to win to secure the number one seed overall in the AFC heading into the postseason, because the Chargers, after they lost to Baltimore last week, blew a golden opportunity. Kansas City lost at Seattle. The Chargers lost to Baltimore. The Chargers would have been the one seed overall if they beat Denver coming up this Sunday. So Kansas City should have a chip. They should be pretty upset. And I don't think Kansas City thought about 2 months ago or 6 weeks ago that this game would actually against the Raiders come down to a seeding, which will make or break this team, in my opinion. To have a home bye week and home field throughout compared to being the 5 seed for Kansas City, a wild card and having to go on the road, that's the difference between getting to a Super Bowl or not. And they put up points and they're ready to go. When you take a look at Kansas City's defense, it's ranked 31st overall defense. They give up 413 yards a game. Their rush defense is ranked 28th at 132 yards a game. Their pass defense, and a lot of this has to do with the fact that they're playing with big leads and their defense teams are throwing on them late in games. They're ranked 31st, giving up 280 yards a game. Now, the Raiders defense, even though they played a really strong game on Monday Night Football, still near the bottom in some of those rankings. Total defense ranked 25th at 379 yards a game, and their rush defense 143.3. That's 30th in the league, and they're giving up 28.8 points a game, which is ranked 31st. So this is a game, we know what's going to happen here. I say this every time I do a podcast or a radio show on the Chiefs. They're going to run misdirection, and they're going to throw to the tight end. I'll repeat it because that will be the focus of the rest of this podcast. They will run misdirection. They'll start a play to the right. They'll throw it back to the left. If the Raider defense doesn't have at least one or two defenders staying home, it's going to be a 30 or 40-yard game. And Travis Kelce is the key at the tight end position. This guy eats up yardage every time he touches the football. So the Raiders are going to have to find a way to hit him off the line of scrimmage. Last game, Kansas City won 40-33. And in that game, Kelce had a monster game. 12 receptions for 168 yards and two touchdowns. Jared Cook had a pretty good game, 7 receptions for 100 yards and a touchdown. So as we jump in with our guests who are going to join us, remember, it comes down to the Raider defense again. What are they playing for? They're playing for pride, to be a spoiler, to put their skills on tape, and they've got to know the game plan of Kansas City, who is not running the ball effectively. They're going to throw it, and they're going to throw it to Kelce, the tight end. So hit him at the line of scrimmage, have a linebacker and a safety over the top, and try. You're not going to take him out of the game completely, but try to slow him down, and then hopefully the Raiders are in this game in the second half, and Carr has the ability to open it up and battle Patrick Mahomes the way that Russell Wilson outplayed and battled Patrick Mahomes on Sunday Night Football last week in a really exciting and entertaining game. So I'm thrilled that we can kick off this week's edition of The Game Plan, the last regular season podcast, with the head coach of the Silver and Black, John Gruden, joins us. Coach, congratulations on the win Monday Night Football, and I hope you and your family had a great Christmas.
Yeah, thanks, JT. That was a great way to celebrate the Christmas holiday for sure, beating our arch rivals on Monday Night Football. And, you know, I'm really proud of our team. We've had a lot of things happen to us this year, but we've won 3 out of our last 6, and we're playing our best football here in December.
No doubt about it. And, Coach, the emotion leading up to the game all week, and you were talking about it and what the stadium means to you and what the fans mean to you. Could you reflect with us going back on the lead up to the game and when you had a private moment after the game, when you got home with you and your family, and what that win meant on Monday Night Football?
Well, it's a great opportunity to share a win with the fans of the Raiders, and there's really no better fans in football than the ones we have. They're loyal. They've been with us from the very beginning, and there's a lot of things going on right now. We're a lot of uncertainty as to where we're playing next year, so we wanted to pay tribute to them by playing our best football, you know, giving them our best effort at least. And if we did win the game, we decided we were going to go celebrate a little bit in the end zone with them, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've seen it up close that you know. You look them in the eye, they look you in the eye. You recognize these fans. That's unique. With all the other great coaches in this league, no other coach has a relationship with a section of fan base and individuals like this, and that's grown over the years, even over your absence when you came back. On Monday Night Football, you'd go into the black hole and connect with the fans.
Yeah, no doubt, and a lot of those guys are my friends. I mean, I know those guys personally in the black hole, and believe me, if I wasn't coaching the Raiders, I'd probably be sitting right next to them. And they're passionate, and it's a great experience to be back with Oakland and certainly to share a couple wins with them. Hopefully we can work this stadium gig out for next year.
I thought the rookie tackles played well, and that's important. From time to time, you'll mention a stat. If Pro Football Focus says something, you'll talk about it in front of the local media. When you see a game like that, when you're able to pass protect and protect your quarterback, but go back to the run blocking and the schemes and the pickups and all of that, I thought that was a game to build on.
Yeah, no doubt. There's not many teams in pro football this year or in the history of the NFL. And you can check this, JT, that starts 2 rookie tackles. I mean, Colton Miller is going to start 16 games at left tackle. Brandon Parker is going to start 12 games at right tackle. There's not many teams in the history of this league that have done that. They've had their moments where they've struggled. They've also had, I think, an opportunity to get better and better, not only in pass protection, but in run blocking. And unfortunately, Pro Football Focus has all the negative statistics that you can possibly think about. And we hear about that often, but people have no idea how hard this business is, especially to play offensive tackle as a rookie and block Von Miller 1 week, you know, Joey Bosa the next, and then you got to go get Chandler Jones. It's a tough, tough, hard business, and I'm really proud of the progression of our 2 young tackles.
Let's stay with the media, because I like the way you're in front of the media all the time. And coming from the media, off of ESPN now, with all the reps you're getting in front of the local media and the national media again, how have you balanced that as you're trying to coach this team and look ahead and build this roster?
Well, I learned a long time ago from Al Davis that anytime you talk to the media, you're really just talking to your football team and your fans. And I just try to be honest and try to be informative as I can be, and go about my day. But it's an obligation that you have now as a head coach. It's mandatory from the NFL that you talk to the media. And I try to be honest with them, and I know our players at times will listen to the comments that I make, and I want to listen to the comments that they make. And you just want to be consistent. You also want to be honest. And I've been accused of being a little bit too positive sometimes, but I could care less.
John Gruden's our guest, and I know that, and that's what's great about you. You could care less, and you know if you do say something to the media and they react to it. Coach, the big change that's happened since I've been with the team and your first time around is Twitter. You can get off the podium in 30 seconds. The beat writers who cover you or the national media are reading instant reaction from the guys who are asking the questions. Has that been a unique situation, or do you just brush it off?
No, I really don't have my own Twitter account. I just try to stay to the X's and the O's, try to get better every day with our coaches and our players. And there's a lot of social media things out there, JT. I have sons. I have three boys that are all well-versed in Twitter and Instagram and Google and Snapchat, all these things. So that's for young people. I'm an old person. I just like football. I'm going to stay close to the vest.
How great has the inspiration of your sons been when you have them all on game day or just Deuce behind you there? We see them on camera. What's that been like on good days and bad days when you have family around?
That's great. You know, it's one of the reasons I came back. You know, I enjoyed sharing football with my sons and my wife when I was coaching in Oakland and in Tampa. And we like being on a team. We like being associated with a team, with the players, with their families, and with the fans, and having something to look forward to on Sundays and Monday nights. And we haven't, you know, obviously done as well as we wanted to do in the one-loss record, but we have laid a foundation of hard work and effort. I think our guys know how to prepare and practice, and the will to win is back here in Oakland. And that's a start.
Coach, I'm an expert in covering this game media-wise because I've been saying it the whole time. It seems to always be about misdirections with Kansas City. They start a play on offense to the right, and they come back the other way, and there's a tight end like Kelce or someone open downfield. Your defense and Paul Gunther in the scheme on Monday night was exceptional. You see it on film with Kansas City. You talked about the arm angles and the throws from Mahomes. How do you stop this misdirection when you know it's coming?
It's hard, man. It's hard. It's really hard because you got to defend two plays every play. You got to defend the play that Andy Reid calls, and it's a very creative play that he has. Then you got to defend the play that Mahomes creates. Every time you cover the receivers and there's nothing there, Mahomes escapes and creates, and that's when he's most dangerous. This might be as good a scrambling quarterback as we have in football because he can kill you running it or throwing it. And they have a lot of speed, and Andy Reid spreads them all across the field. We're going to have our hands full. Hopefully we get Gary and Conley back this week. We'll see. But we've got to play a much better brand of defense than we did the first time out.
Coach, I want to wrap it up also on Mahomes with you. When you talked about his ability at the MVP level, because the votes are coming in, and he's close to 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns, I think it would be insane to steal the MVP award from this kid. I thought he won it a month ago, and he's got a lot more to play with because they want to keep that one seed and not drop to the five seed after the Chargers lost to Baltimore. So they got a lot to play for. Andy Reid is a friend and a rival. I would think that the pregame speech and the hype all this week getting the team ready is there because just being professionals want to beat a rival and go out on a strong note.
Yeah, no doubt. And we know they have a lot at stake, but we got a lot at stake too.
Yeah.
We have players that are playing for jobs, that are positioning themselves for next season. And if you're a defensive player, certainly, you want to measure yourself against the best. And this is arguably the best offense in football and the hottest quarterback. He's the rage. And they've got a great talented nucleus around him, a very creative offense, I should say, and it'll be a real challenge.
And lastly, on your quarterback, can you leave us something with Derek Carr? His preparation with you, I remember the late nights we've talked about with Gannon, and Gannon beating everybody to the facility, and you and him being on the same page. The evolution of your relationship with Derek Carr from Napa heading into the game, the last one against Kansas City.
I'm really happy and really pleased with the direction that the two of us have headed. And I give Derek a lot of credit, JT. He's lost three of his top receivers. He's lost his right tackle. He lost his right guard. He's lost his feature back. He's lost a lot of key guys. But he's going to have a chance to throw for 4,000 yards and almost 70%, and really hasn't thrown an interception in over 300 attempts. He's had us in position the last 7 or 8 weeks out, and he'll get better and better as we get better and better around him.
Coach, good luck getting the win at Kansas City. Always appreciate your time. Have a great new year.
All right, JT. Happy holidays.
Really appreciate Coach Gruden making time for us, especially in preparation for this last game against Kansas City. Always excited to talk to John Gruden. Now we move on to one of my favorite NFL insiders from Sports Illustrated. Robert Klempko joins us from SI.com. Robert, happy holidays. Thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know, I want to get into a few things. First off, you were tweeting after the Monday night Raider victory where they beat the Denver Broncos in Oakland. Just your perspective from the parking lot to the stadium to the significance of all the great games that were played there and the legendary players that played at the Coliseum as it wrapped up on Monday night.
Yeah, you know, I had the privilege of covering a few games there, but also – every stadium, I've been every stadium in the NFL in the last 5 years, and I've just never been to a game day experience like that, where you have all these different cultures at a football game and all these different types of barbecue, and that smell is just mixing together in that parking lot, and the people are so happy and friendly and happy to be there, you know, unless you're wearing the other team's colors, which why would you ever do that? But it's an awesome game day experience, and I don't think that people that see, you know, the black hole on television and hear about it or read about it can really understand it unless they've been there.
Yeah, it truly is an amazing experience because of the footprint of the Coliseum with Oracle Arena, where the Warriors are, where the A's have played all those games. But I thought you nailed it on your tweet, too, about just the culture inside that parking lot and the diversity of all the different fans and what the fans have been through since they left and came back again in the pending move to Nevada. These fans have been through a lot, and they're very loyal.
They are. And I know that stadium isn't as full as it once was, you know, when they were in the playoffs and going to Super Bowls. But that core of people that still go are unmatched in terms of their passion, I think. You know, it's something I think that the NFL will ultimately miss, and it's being replaced with what's pretty much going to be a tourist destination in Las Vegas. You know, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's going to resemble Miami game, San Diego games, where if you're a fan of the other team that's visiting, that's the game you're going to mark on the calendar as the one that you travel to see, because you get to go to Vegas.
Robert Klempko is our guest from Sports Illustrated. Your overall view of John Gruden with all the decisions he's made during the year, clearly the Mac and Amari Cooper move are the high-profile ones, but as he's trying to change the roster on the fly in anticipation of the draft, where they'll have three first-round picks.
Yeah, you know, I think you have to be impressed with how they haven't given up the fight here towards the end of the season. You know, they're not going to end up with the number one pick. They've been competitive in games, but I don't know how you give a first-year head coach anything better than a failing grade if he trades away a franchise edge rusher, which is what everybody's seeking in the league right now next to the quarterback, and then a guy that very obviously had been mismanaged or underutilized in Oakland, because you see the production that Amari Cooper has had in Dallas. So, if I'm ranking the head coaches in their first year performances, I'd put John Gruden near the bottom, frankly. I mean, he has to have incredible drafts. Even if they have draft Pro Bowlers with the picks that they got for these guys, there's a chance that they won't add up to what Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper could have been in Raider uniform.
I get that. And again, as we're talking about the Raiders here with Robert Klempko from Sports Illustrated, the money factor had a lot to do with that. So when it comes to Mack, I think you would agree, Gruden thought that Mack was a brilliant player. It didn't come down to him liking him as a player or his skill set. Everyone does to a man. It came down to $90 million, guaranteed $60 million to sign. And looking back at that, in hindsight, obviously, if the Raiders were able to do that or something close to that with the car guaranteed money, would they have the money to be competitive by building around those two players? And I'll ask you again, if they had Mac on the team this year, do you think they're a 4-win team, a 6-win team? A lot of people don't think they'd be a playoff team even with Mac. How do you see it?
Yeah, I don't think they'd be a playoff team. I think they'd be a 6 or 7 win team. You know, I think that they have to solve problems on the other side of the ball with the quarterback and the aging offensive line before anything else. At the same time, you know, if you ask a head coach or a general manager in the NFL to draft a team from scratch and say, you can have one franchise-level talent at any position, what are you taking? You're going to take the quarterback, obviously, and then in today's NFL, you're going to take the edge rusher, or you're going to take a guy like Aaron Donald who can change a game on the inside of the defensive line. So I think once you identify that player, once he wants to be in your city, regardless of who the coaching staff is, I think you do everything you can to keep that player. And if that hamstrings you money-wise in the future, you know, I think you can chalk that up to coaching and roster building as opposed to, you know, paying the best player at his position too much money.
Your pinned tweet back in August, August 29th, says the Kansas City Chiefs are going to win the 53rd Super Bowl. All opinions to the contrary are incorrect. That is all. I give you credit. You're sticking by this pick. They've had a great year, but they've kind of struggled a little bit the final month. Evaluate Kansas City in a must-win situation so they don't drop from the 1-5 seed heading into the postseason.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. It felt like a little bit of karma when that team was talking about how little distraction they had and kind of making up controversies. You remember the Patrick Mahomes made up controversy with his practice squad wide receiver there, and then they have the biggest controversy of the NFL season hit them with the Kareem Hunt getting cut and potentially suspended from the NFL for a very long time. I think that hurt them and distracted them more than they'll acknowledge, more than probably people realize. He was a tremendous player that you could leave in on third down because he could catch the ball and he could block, and they just didn't have that at the end of the depth chart there at the other various levels there. So I think that's something that they had to overcome and that they had to tweak their play calling and their game planning around. So that's going to take a while, right? I think that could take more than a month. And I think if they have a chance to get hot here late, If we had to repick teams, I would probably pick a team in the NFC like the Saints or the Rams. But officially, I'm going to stick with my Chiefs pick just because I made it back in August, right?
Yes, absolutely. And coming into this game against the Raiders, they have a lot to play for because the Chargers blew a golden opportunity to go from the five seed, to the one seed when they lost to Baltimore. So do you believe the mindset of Kansas City now going into the postseason, do they have this team right? Because clearly losing a great back and what happened with Kareem Hunt, it's taken away a weapon, but they still have Tyreek Hill. They have an incredible tight end, and they have a quarterback who I believe, and I think you would, has won the MVP award already. So what's the ceiling for this team, and what's the potential downside for Andy Reid, who's been here before over his career but can't punch his ticket to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the MVP award. I think I've heard talk about Drew Brees, but if they give it to Drew, that's a lifetime achievement award. That's a sentimental pick. Patrick Mahomes is clearly the best quarterback in the NFL right now. He's the hottest quarterback. Even in the games they've lost, he's been incredibly impressive. But in the playoffs, it's going to come down to, I think, the ability to run the ball, the ability to sustain the clock and support that defense, which has really struggled here in the last couple months. So to me, I would think that in this final week of the season, and especially early in the playoffs, they would try to establish a dominant ground game so that they're not in second and long situations and third and long situations, and Patrick has to clean things up with his arm.
As we wrap this up overall, I look at the Raiders and Kansas City. What a rivalry. And the AFC has had unbelievable rivalries in the West since dating back to the AFL. For the Raiders on the way out this season, how important is it going to be, not so much the outcome of this game, but right after this game for John Gruden, now that Reggie McKenzie is gone, to get in-house with the staff that he's going to have going forward, the scouts, and the ability to evaluate this draft talent? Because, you know, Justin Herbert's not coming out. The quarterback position, if Carr is the quarterback long-term, they seem to be set. But as you mentioned earlier in the interview, Robert, they got to nail the draft, not only in the first round, but in the pending rounds after that. They got to come out of this upcoming draft with at least four or five starters, not projects, along with possibly four or five free agents. Do you think the Raiders can get about 8, 9, or 10 new starters so maybe they'll have another productive year while they're in Oakland before they get to Vegas, or if they have to move to another city before they get to the city of sin?
Yeah, you know, I think it would be a huge thing to get a win like this. It's a momentum builder for any franchise in a lost season to win in Week 17. And you want to get the feeling that the guys believe in the mission and believe in the coach. At the same time, I think the most important game upcoming for the Raiders is potentially going to be the Senior Bowl. I would think that John Gruden and his staff would have an opportunity to coach that Senior Bowl game. It usually gets assigned to coaches with losing records near the top of the draft order who have some job security. Last year it was Vance Joseph, and the Denver Broncos ended up drafting a number of players in that game, and their draft class is being hailed as one of the best in the NFL. I think if you're a good coach and you have great scouts and a good coaching staff that has an eye for college talent, you can use that week of time with those players and really get a leg up on the rest of the league. So I would think that they would jump at that opportunity, and if I were a Raider fan, that's the game I would really be paying attention to.
Robert, have a great new year. Wanted to have you on to preview this game. I love your work at Sports Illustrated. Have a great 2019, and thanks for the time.
Thank you for having me.
Remember, you could follow Robert Klemko at SI.com or on Twitter at Robert Klemko, K-L-E-M-K-O. All right, let's wrap up this week's edition of The Game Plan with the man who called the last game, play-by-play voice Ian Eagle, last time the Chiefs played the Raiders in Oakland. Ian, thanks a lot for coming on. I always appreciate when we can connect again.
You got it, JT. Great talking to you, man.
Great. The last game, and you called this game in this rivalry, was a shootout, and I thought that was one of the more exciting games because a lot of people coming in just thought that the Raiders were going to get hammered in that game. What was your big takeaway from the Raiders and their offense in that performance, even though they lost?
Yeah, takeaway for me was mostly dealing with the Gruden-Carr dynamic, that it has been a work in progress. It has been an evolution, and while it started in maybe a rocky way, and didn't go nearly as smoothly as everybody anticipated it would, as the smoke clears at the end of this season, I think they've broken through to a level now where you can feel better about that relationship moving forward, 2019 and possibly beyond. But to me, that's really the biggest criteria of what's going to happen in this next chapter for the Oakland Raiders. Certainly money to be spent in free agency, draft picks galore based on the trades that they made. But they needed to make sure that Carr and Gruden were on solid ground. And I think that game was an indicator that things were going in the right direction. And since that point, I've only felt more strongly about that. I think that's been validated.
Yeah, that relationship with Gruden and Carr is essential because there's so much on his plate, and you've interviewed John Gruden throughout the years. We just spoke to him, and it's really impressive to see what he's giving Carr and Carr's handling it. But when you look at those numbers, and you look at Carr, he's checking down a lot. He's throwing short passes. Yep. He's got this run without an interception. He's not attacking deep into the end zone like Raider quarterbacks, even himself as the past. Is that something that you're surprised to see, or Gruden's going to give him more in years to come and he'll be ready for it?
Yeah, I would sense more of the latter. I've done enough Derek Carr games through the years where I've seen him take his shots when he's had the personnel where he believes he can win on one-on-one matchups with his receiver matched up with a corner or matched up with a safety. This year, I just don't know if the personnel backs up that theory, and he's had to do what he's had to do based on what he's got around him. And that's not to say that this team can't add pieces. They will. The one thing about the NFL, JT, as you know, you've covered this league a long time, 15 of the last 16 years, a team has gone from worst to first. It seems to happen every single year. This is a fluid situation. If, given certain circumstances, injury base, personnel, changeover in a regime, you can turn things around rather quickly and be successful. The questions are, can you sustain it? And that's where the unique teams stand out. The New England Patriots obviously come to mind first. What they've done, 10 straight division titles, 10 straight trips to the playoffs, double-digit wins year in and year out. Even the year that Tom Brady was out with the injury, they won 11 games that season, just didn't make the playoffs. So that consistency is what everybody strives for, not just the flash in the pan, have one good year, and then not be heard from again. The Raiders want to build something, and the way to do it is by sticking by your guns and sticking with the plan. And I think John Gruden has a legitimate plan.
CBS play-by-play voice, one of the best in the NFL, Ian Eagle is our guest. Moving to Kansas City, I thought that Mahomes won the MVP a month ago because his stats are overwhelming. And even though he trails Drew Brees when it comes to overall quarterback rating just by a little bit, the touchdowns and yards. I mean, I grew up baseball MVP, it's home runs, RBIs. Football, yeah. It's typically touchdowns and yards. I thought he ran away with it, but there's just been a little bit of a struggle in his big, big marquee games, from the Rams game to Seattle. He's coming out on the losing end, even though he's playing well. Assess his play on the year.
Yeah, the Chargers game comes to mind as well. I thought that was a big crossroads game for him, even though he didn't lose it. The defense did. It's fourth down. You got to stop Phillip Rivers. Once you do, the game's over. Kansas City wins. And I think Mahomes is applauded for the way he handled himself on that final Thursday night game. They lose, and it changes the optic a bit. If you're asking me right now who's the MVP, in my mind, it's still Patrick Mahomes. What he's done, the totality of his season, the reminder that he's in his second year, his first year as a starter. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to breeze through a typical NFL schedule, putting up video game-like numbers, four touchdowns, five touchdowns. It's scary how much ability and talent and the acumen that he has. Now, with that said, I believe that Drew Brees was going to get some votes just based on his career, and based on the fact that he's never won it. To me, Mahomes is the MVP. Rivers in that conversation. Gurley in that conversation. Beyond that, I wouldn't go much deeper. I think it's going to be Mahomes when it's all said and done.
Looking at the playoff picture for Kansas City going forward, they had an opportunity. I think the Chargers had the bigger opportunity and lost that home game to Baltimore. They'd be the one seed. Kansas City would be the five. So if Kansas City gets this win against Oakland, they'll get a home bye week and playoffs throughout Arrowhead. That's a big difference for the NFL compared to home field throughout Carson, California, and a soccer stadium that doesn't hold 30,000. I think Andy Reid's going to have them ready to go. They need a bye week. They need to reset and have momentum in the postseason, right?
Yeah, I agree on all that. I'd say the one caveat I would have for LA is that they're used to this idea of being hardened and playing on the road, and playing at home feels like you're playing on the road. So I don't think the Chargers will be intimidated by the idea that they have to go into somebody else's stadium to win a game. They felt this way throughout not just this year but last year, based on the bizarre set of circumstances that has led them to the stadium that they're in right now. With that said about Kansas City, there are vulnerabilities. But, JT, I could make the case there are vulnerabilities everywhere around the NFL. All of the big-time teams are vulnerable to some degree. NFC, New Orleans, I don't think they're world beaters. They're very good, but they're beatable. The Rams, same story. A lot of injuries that have piled up to key players, even key backups, guys that may have played a role in the final stretch of the season or into the postseason. The Cowboys, look, we're not that far removed from a Cowboy team that was considered underachieving and questions about the head coach's future. And now Dallas has caught a little bit of lightning in the bottle, but for them to go on the road and get it done, I think there are legitimate question marks. And the same in the AFC. You laid it out with Kansas City. You mentioned it with the Chargers. New England, this is not the same mystique that it once was. Still very dangerous, and if they have home field in the first round of the playoffs, in the divisional round, then odds are they advance to the AFC Championship game yet again. And we know what Belichick and Brady's record is facing that. Baltimore and Seattle are the two teams that have come on of late and I would not want any part of, just based on the matchups, based on their respective defenses, and then based on the unpredictability of Lamar Jackson, although you're asking a lot of him in the postseason with little experience, and then Russell Wilson, who has done it. He's got the body of work. He's throwing the best deep ball right now in the NFL. There's a belief right now in Seattle They've rallied around their new persona. Those are the two teams that you have to keep an eye on based on some of the matchups that they might have in their respective playoff run.
Wrapping it up with Ian Eagle, back to Gruden. Tell us what you think about the way he's handling the media. He's in front of the media all the time in Oakland. Nationally, when they play in a national game, everybody's craving to talk to him. He gives information. Sometimes people scratch their head. I think there's a method to all of this, as he was so sophisticated quickly as a member of the media, climbed the ladder of broadcasting when it came to revenue and the amount of eyeballs on him, and now he's back again dealing with beat writers, sideline reporters. Overall, what has been intriguing to you as a great broadcaster when you see Gruden now back as a head coach dealing with the media?
Yeah, I think when you've got big-time coaches that win Super Bowls and then step away, Bill Parcells did it, not to the level that John Gruden did. Bill was doing some studio stuff, did some games, dabbled with NBC, but never was on the stage that John was on as a broadcaster. But I think he came back with some renewed insight into how he wanted to handle things. And I believe John is probably in that same category, seeing it from a different angle, visiting all of these training camps year in, year out, visiting with coaches, seeing how certain coaches deal with things on their press conference day, on their production meeting day. John's a really smart guy, and I know that John doesn't do things just to toss it into the wind to see how it goes. He does things with a real purpose in mind. And I think this new iteration of John, while everybody just anticipated and expected him to have instant success with the Oakland Raiders, it's required a little more patience, and it's probably forced him to look within himself a bit more and handle things a little differently and realize that this is a marathon. It's not the sprint. He's already got the resume, so, and he's got the money, obviously. The financial package is impressive, and it's prodigious. Now it's a matter of doing it the right way and doing it in a way that he can look back and feel proud of, and not just trying to squeeze square pegs into round holes. This offseason's huge. It really is, to set the tone for how this regime is going to go. And I think with success, you'll probably see a little bit of the old John Gruden pop up here and there. But the way that these results have been, it just hasn't been conducive for that.
Let's wrap it up on that note with the offseason. And before you get into draft study after your, you know, play-by-play calls on CBS, I wanted to just end on this note. He's got to nail the draft. Everybody understands that the Bears draft pick and the Cowboy draft pick will not be a top 10 pick because of their success. They'll have their high pick for the Raider pick. It's important that not only do they nail the draft, but in the later round picks, they got to get starters, Ian. They got to get guys who can come in and start, not guys who are projects or a guy that you reach on, hopefully he could do a couple of things. And then the free agent money. Where do you stand on that? Because the Raiders, as of our conversation, have 90-plus million. The recruiting speech to get them to play in Vegas eventually for tax ramifications, brand new stadium, that's going to sell itself. But to get about 8 or 9 new starters with the guys that Gruden already drafted from up front with P.J. Hall and Mo up front, and when you have the two rookie tackles, if he can nail the draft and free agency, could this turn quicker than expected?
Yeah, there's this unscientific nature to this, because you're not just drafting guys that ran X number of seconds on their 40 time or lifted a certain amount of weight. You're drafting heart. You're drafting personality. You're drafting someone that can buy into the culture, that can learn and do it in a way that eventually gets paid forward to younger players 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now. So I know we assess things on day one. Everybody hands out grades the first day of the draft, the second day of the draft, so on and so forth. The reality is everything you said is 100% accurate. This is so pivotal for Gruden and for his tenure second time around with the Raiders. They can't whiff. And I'm not talking about home runs, and I'm not even talking about triples, but they got to hit some doubles in this draft. They've got to find guys, you're right, in the fourth round that can start for this team and can find a role and can fit in and you can build with. That's not even an option anymore of, oh, it would be a nice bonus. No, this is where they stand. They've got to revamp this roster, and they've got to get players to mesh with the free agent signings right away. That's the order that's in front of this team. And yes, it's already been proven, JT. You can turn your whole franchise around with one good draft and one good free agent signing period. And that can be the basis of the next step as an organization. There's no doubt about that.
You know how much I respect your work, my friend. I really appreciate your time. Happy holidays, happy new year, and thanks for giving us a few minutes.
Yeah, always great talking to you, bud. Enjoy the holidays, and we'll talk soon.
I love everything about the play-by-play style of Ian Eagle, one of the best in the business. Good guest to wrap it up with, as he had some pretty good insight, especially on what the Raiders need to do going forward. Want to thank everyone behind the scenes at the podcast, Bobby Machado, who puts it together with me, Marcus Padilla, up in Oakland, Alameda, and everyone at Silver and Black Productions. As you know from downloading the podcast and going to Raiders.com and the Raiders' social media, from Snapchat to Twitter to Facebook, this is a 24/7 operation and one of the best in all of football. The digital content, all of the video content, it is second to none. And the crew's going to be busy in the offseason as the Raiders hit the ground running, getting ready for the upcoming draft. From my family to your family, happy holidays, happy new year, and thanks for downloading the Game Plan podcast on the Raiders Podcasting Network.
Thank you for listening to the Game Plan on the official Raiders Podcast Network.